in and around the town of Albert with about 150 heavy-duty lorries, 10-tonners, carrying petrol and food from railhead to forward dumps. Things were working quite well. But when the Germans broke through, we were directly in the line of advance. The Germans started bombing Albert 10 or 15 times a day with fairly heavy bombs, and they were particularly savage with some of the factories around the town. They began to be quite regular in their bombing raids. They always had one at 6:30 in the evening, for instance. However, we had no casualties from these raids. After a few days of this, we were ordered to move back. We had an hour to move off and left in the afternoon. I set off with 13 lorries towards Doulance. The roads were all choked with civilian refugees. In fact, I think the congestion on the roads was one of the worst things we had to deal with. However, we got to Doulance safely, loaded up with food, and travelled through the night, without lights, of course, by the St. Paul Road to Pierrement Village, and there we spent 2 days establishing a dump. One of the trickiest jobs with lorries the size of ours is to hide them successfully. We put them in sunken roads and under trees, and wherever we could get deep shadows. I think we can say we were pretty successful at this, because although we had a reconnaissance plane overlooking for what it could find, it didn't seem to find much in Pierrement. But there were 100 tons of petrol in that village, 130 tons of rations, and 360-odd stone jars of rum. We spent 2 or 3 days in Pierrement. We spent a number of days after that moving over the country and to the Forêt de Leek, where we hid the lorries under the trees. While we were there, we heard a German armoured car was within 5 kilometres. I set out with a light lorry and a Lewis gun and a party of men to try and find it. We didn't find the armoured car, fortunately, and after some time we gave up the search and were returning to the column when my motorcyclist told me that between us and the wood were 2 German tanks. He said that they were stationary and that the crews were out of them. We drew our lorry across the road, and then we advanced on foot on both sides of the road between the high banks, looking down towards the road, and then I saw the tanks for the first time. Our party had rifles with them, and we fired several shots at the crews of the tanks, but by this time the Germans were getting into their machines and moving off towards the wood. Just at that moment, a reconnaissance plane came down over us with its machine gun firing. That took our attention off the tanks for a moment, and then, just afterwards, I saw ahead on the road a convoy of vehicles blazing after they had been fired at by the machine guns on the tanks. A few minutes later, I heard heavy firing going on in the wood. I decided that it would be dangerous and unreasonable to try and follow the tanks into the wood, so I moved my party away to the right and into the wood by means of a side road. We stopped in the wood and went on foot through it to try and find the rest of our company. But we lost direction and came out over the road which we had originally been using, where we saw the blazing lorries still burning by the roadside. We moved back and went to our own vehicles and then set off down the road towards Calais. Some distance out of the wood and in a small village, we stopped at a farmhouse to try and find out what was happening. We were fortunate enough to get some beer. And while we were drinking this and getting what information we could, one of my men reported that there were two tanks, one of which was coming down the road towards us and only about 200 yards away. We immediately dived into our vehicles and almost left behind 2 men who wanted to finish their beer, but fortunately they got on board, and then we started off down the road to Calais, and this time we reached it safely.
At this time I was in the wood, talking to the second in command. We'd gone deeper in to take cover from an aeroplane. After a moment we didn't hear the aeroplane, but we heard the firing, and then I saw the first tank coming towards the wood, firing its 4-pounder, and a moment after a second tank. Our chaps all took cover in the wood. They had their rifles with them, and whenever they could they were shooting at the tanks. One of the section sergeants was badly wounded while he was trying to mount a lorry which carried a machine gun. As I got deeper into the wood, I saw another tank covering the road to Calais. It was in a clearing. The scrap in the wood went on for a long time, and at last I got lost. It was dark by this time, and I went to sleep at the foot of a tree. I was awakened by a noise like an aeroplane, and when I fully woke up, I discovered it was one of the tanks. It stopped about 30 yards in front of me. Very soon, another one drew up alongside. I daren't move. I'd no arms with me except a revolver, and I heard the Germans filling up the tank and moving around. Then I heard an aeroplane come near, and one of the men from the tanks came out into the open, and with a thing like a big phosphorescent plate, he seemed to be signaling to the plane. I lay there for about 2.5 hours until there was absolute quiet around those tanks, and then I crawled towards the edge of the wood and made my way across the fields to Guise, where I persuaded a Belgian refugee to take me into Calais, and there I made a report about the position of the tanks to headquarters.
I was driving a subaltern back to our headquarters in the Leek Forest in an Austin 7. We were travelling pretty fast, about 2 miles ahead of our convoy, when suddenly I saw a German tank standing just off the side of the road. The gunner was in the conning tower, brandishing two terrific automatic pistols in a very businesslike manner. He put a couple of bullets through the engine before we had time to do anything, and the next thing I knew, I was in the ditch and my officer had been captured. I heard the German asking where I was, and within a moment the tank started firing its machine gun into my ditch. A bullet glanced off my helmet and another grazed my face, so I thought it about time to come out. The Germans ordered the two of us to walk down into the road, into the village. They had taken away the officer's revolver. When we came to the village, we thought we'd do a sharp left turn and get out of sight. But there was another tank waiting there, so we went on through the village, thinking we might do a sharp right turn to the same effect. We did so, but no, there was another tank there, so we went on into the village again, and this time we tried to get into a house. We went through the house and into the garden. There was no cover there at all, except a very large rabbit hutch, so we crawled under that and kept very still. We lay under that rabbit hutch for about 2 hours while the Germans walked around us, not more than 10 yards away. In the second hour, there was quite a battle between the tanks and a French anti-tank gun which we had passed along the road. When it was all quiet again at dusk, we crawled out and made across country towards Berg. After dark, we marched on the North Star. We got to Berg at dawn, and there a car gave us a lift to Dunkirk.
I am a junior officer in a field ambulance and only went out to France in the middle of April. We were on the Belgian frontier when the big show started and got up to Tournai as fast as we could, where we established a main dressing station and an advanced dressing station. There we were badly bombed all the time, but went on dealing with casualties, both civilian and military. After 5 days there, we got back to somewhere near Lille and had numerous casualties from bombing during our 4 or 5 days in that district. On the way back, we had a very startling experience, as while we left one end of the village, the Hun came in the other. So we destroyed all our supplies, but kept our vehicles. With us, we had a very charming brown kitten, which we had brought from England. And while we were leaving the village, a shell burst amongst us, and the kitten ran out and was lost. 3 days later, as we heard the Hun had been driven out of this village, we went back to see if we could find anything of our equipment or anything else. And there, sitting in the ruins of our house, was our precious mascot, which seemed to recognize us at once, and which we carefully packed into one of our vans. I'm not quite certain where the cat is now, but I believe one of the other fellows brought it back to England. At Dunkirk, we formed an MDS and two ADSs just outside the town, where we had an enormous number of casualties to deal with, and were being persistently bombed and shelled all the time. Here, we were pretty short of food and lived mostly on biscuits. But I must say that when we were up near Lille, we had a splendid time as far as food is concerned. We killed cattle and pigs and ate anything we could find. When we withdrew from Dunkirk, we destroyed our lorries and gave the remains of our medical supplies to the casualty clearing station. From the beach, we saw people leaving in all sorts of peculiar boats, some of them even setting out to row to England. I left on a very crowded cross-channel ship and had never realized before what a beautiful thing it can be to land in a country like England.